This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Very best bits of today's show from 28th of November. It is a Sunday morning. We have got, listen, everyone's talking about Omicron. Howard Podolsky, Dr. Howard, is going to be joining us shortly. We're going to hear from him, head of the Cambridge Medical and Rehab Centre, talking us through the medical, what we know and what we don't know about the new variant of Delta. And then a little bit later on, Vinamra Longoni of Sarin & Co. is going to talk to us about the aviation implications of this. He's an aviation expert based in India. And then in the middle of all that, we're going to lighten the mood by talking about the economics of crypto. Really enjoyed Anas Burton from Art Dow and the Crypto Shakes podcast. All that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with your headlines.
Big focus this morning on the new Omicron variant that is coming out of Southern Africa at the moment and having an impact across the world. We're going to take a look at it from a news current affairs perspective with Serena. We're going to have a look at the economic impacts with Khatija Haque in just a few moments' time. Serena Kelly still in studio with Rich and myself. Reese, what do we know?
So Omicron, WHO have dubbed it a variant of concern, saying it's potentially more contagious than previous variants of the virus, more transmissible as well. First identified in South Africa, but it has been detected in other countries, including Belgium, Botswana, Israel, Hong Kong, Italy and the UK. Dr. Maria van Kerkhove, the epidemiologist and WHO technical lead, explains where we are at with the variant.
There are fewer than 100 full genome sequences that are available. We don't know very much about this yet. What we do know is that this variant has a large number of mutations. And the concern is that when you have so many mutations, it can have an impact on how the virus behaves. So right now, researchers are getting together to understand where these mutations are and what that potentially may mean for our diagnostics, our therapeutics, and our vaccines. It's good that they are being detected. It means that we have a system in place. It will take a few weeks for us to understand what impact this variant has.
There's so many things to consider off of the back of what she said, but one of the things that has come out recently is since the identification of the variant, Moderna, they've announced a strategy to address the new variant. The company are testing three existing COVID vaccine booster candidates against Omicron. They've already been working with study groups and in the lab as well, because they've been anticipating from various variants that have been popping up. So data is expected in the coming weeks. So that is a positive. But I think the main message that is sort of coming across from the WHO is please don't panic. We don't have enough information currently, but they're on top of it. And the fact that she was saying in the clip there that they have systems clearly working and in place, that they've been able to identify this variant quickly and efficiently, they'll be able to get on top of it. But the main thing, the first, obviously, primary concern is making sure the vaccines that are currently available, that the antibodies that are being produced in our systems are able to defend against this new variant. But of course, over the weekend, a lot of domino effects over the concern of the variant. You've had many countries across the globe, including the UAE, announcing travel bans or restrictions on Southern Africa and other nations.
Question from me to you on that one.
Yep.
Is that to and from, or is it just flights from South Africa?
So for the UAE,
can you get to South Africa?
So the UAE is still going.
Okay.
So I can give you those details. I'll sum them up for you because I know that you want to get onto other things as well. So with regards to the UAE, suspended entry of travelers from South Africa, Namibia, Lesotho, Eswatini, Zimbabwe, Botswana and Mozambique. They've named seven starting tomorrow. The announcement came in on Friday. So basically travel's been suspended if you've been in any of the seven countries in the past 14 days, but you can stop somewhere else, spend 2 weeks there, and then you can carry on to the UAE. Also flight operations, they've said, will continue to transport passengers from the UAE to those seven countries. So the heading out has not been restricted. There are certain categories that are exempt from the restrictions as well. I can go through those later. Mm-hmm. But the UAE is not the only country to implement certain restrictions as well. Last night you had UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He made announcements as well regarding they've updated their red lists. That means you need to quarantine coming from certain countries, and certain African nations are on there as well. But the main thing is PCR tests on day two after arrival.
Serena, thank you very much indeed. More from Serena throughout the day. Keep your questions coming in. 4001, Rich is looking at the economic impacts.
Yes, indeed, with Khatija Haq. She is the chief economist and also head of research at Emirates NBD. Joins us now live on the line. Morning, Khatija.
Good morning, Richard.
So quite a day on Friday on the markets. Oil down 13%. Stock markets also falling. What did you make of this?
So I think it's important to recognize that going into the Thanksgiving holiday, which was on Thursday last week, the market was actually becoming much more optimistic about the broader economic recovery, but particularly in the US. So the talk was actually of faster tapering and earlier rate hikes, and the economy certainly been getting a lot stronger. So the reaction on Friday, you know, clearly was a surprise, but I think it also underscores the fragility of the global recovery, that just something around which there is such a huge amount of uncertainty can have such a big impact on financial markets. Although the fact that it was a holiday shortened week, the fact that the US only had a half day trading on Friday means that perhaps some of the moves were exaggerated. And once everyone is back, we may see some recovery from that. But effectively, yes, European equity markets were down between 4 and 5%. U.S. equities in just half a day lost more than 2% of value. Unsurprisingly, the travel stocks were among the hardest hit given the travel restrictions that have been imposed. And then there was a flight to safety to assets like the Japanese yen and U.S. treasuries, which are traditional safe haven assets. So we had the U.S. bond yield falling by about 16 basis points to 147%. And of course, the market pushing back the expected start of rate hikes in the United States from June to July, and really only expecting now two rate hikes rather than three. So the expectation is that this variant potentially does tighten restrictions and slow growth. And that obviously is what is being reflected in oil prices as well.
So I got a message over the weekend from a mutual friend of ours, Brandy Scott, who's off this weekend. She's in Dubai, but she's off work this week, taking a well-earned break. And she was telling me that on Friday, as markets tumbled, she was buying airline stocks and she was buying hotel stocks. Now, I know, Khatija, you're not a stock market analyst. You're a macroeconomist. But this idea of taking the opportunity to buy things while the markets are a little bit lower. I mean, the US dollar also fell. Cryptocurrencies fell. What do we make of that strategy?
Look, I mean, it could be successful and it could not. It really depends on your time horizon as an investor. If you're looking at, you know, a few days, or if you're looking at sort of 20 years, then obviously there's less risk on the long-term view. But I think what a lot of people are looking at the reaction and saying, well, this is an overreaction, because we don't actually know what this new variant might mean. We don't really know whether the vaccines may very well be effective against, you know, serious illness caused by this virus. And so in that scenario, you wouldn't expect a permanent or long-term impact on travel and on hospitality. It may simply be a few weeks until there is more information and people are more reassured, and then, you know, things could get easier. So it's really just people taking risks on the back of uncertainty. And it's difficult to price something in when you don't really know what it is that you're dealing with. And that's where, you know, potentially people could do well, but alternatively, they could turn out to be wrong and do quite badly. So there's lots of variables.
Finally, Khatija, a quick word. I know you're South African, on what this means for the economies of Southern Africa in general and South Africa in particular. Just 30 seconds on that, if you would.
Well, it's really a big blow to the Southern African economies, because they've really been under quite severe restrictions all through this year. And they were only starting to see tourism pick up from October, when most of the major economies did, including the UAE, ease restrictions for travel. But that's lasted only just a month. And I think what's particularly frustrating is that we know that this variant is already in other countries. And so it just feels a little bit like South Africa's been been picked on, I suppose, to suffer the worst consequences when really, you know, this variant is everywhere already.
Khatija, always great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Busy day for you. I'm sure your clients have got lots of questions. So thanks for taking time out to speak to us. That's the voice of the chief economist and the head of research at Emirates NBD, Khatija Haque.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Now let's get back to today's talkers. And there is only one subject that is dominating the news agenda today. You've been harvesting opinions, Richard Dean.
That's right. Yeah. Omicron, of course, the big story of the past 48, 72 hours. With a business breakfast, so let's do the markets first of all. Khatija Haque is chief economist and head of research at Emirates NBD. 12-13% fall in the oil price, European markets down 5%. We asked her whether this is now a buying opportunity on markets.
A lot of people are looking at the reaction and saying, well, this is an overreaction because we don't actually know what this new variant might mean. The vaccines may very well be effective against serious illness caused by this virus. And so in that scenario, you wouldn't expect a permanent or long-term impact on travel and on hospitality here. So it's really just people taking risks on the back of uncertainty.
That's Khatija Haque on a buying opportunity from the sharp fall in markets, whether it's cryptos or oil or stock markets. I know Brandy Scott was buying airline and hospitality stocks over the weekend. We're not endorsing that strategy. It's just what she was doing. She's off this week, but she is back on Thursday for our special broadcast. Okay, that's the markets bit. Let's be honest, though, it's not really a market story. It's not really a business story. It's a medical story. New coronavirus variant wreaking havoc across the world. To find out more, our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, has been speaking all things Omicron with one of our favourite doctors, Dr. Howard Podolsky, Group CEO of the Cambridge Medical and Rehab Centre here in the UAE. And he began by asking Dr. Howard what we know and what we don't know so far about the new variant.
What we know so far is that the Omicron variant contains more than 50 mutations as compared to the original SARS-CoV-2 virus isolated in 2019. Of those mutations, more than 30 of them are related to the spike protein, which allows the virus to bind to our cells. It appears that the changes to the spike protein may result in the ability of the virus to enter our cells easier and therefore create greater transmissibility of the Omicron variant. We're still learning a great deal about the Omicron variant at this point in time. It does appear to be the cause of the increase in the number of cases in South Africa over the past 2 weeks. However, we're continuing to test the virus and evaluate the ability of the virus to make us more sick than the current Delta variant that's in worldwide circulation.
Mohammed continued by asking Dr. Howard about vaccines and if we know whether or not they'll quote unquote work against the new variant.
With regard to the efficacy of our current vaccines, that those two are currently being tested at this point in time. However, we do know that the vaccines that we currently have available remained quite effective against the Delta variant, which spread very quickly throughout the world and remains the predominant variant at this point in time.
Finally, Dr. Howard, speaking to our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, ended with a familiar piece of advice.
For now, I would continue to advise that anyone who has not been vaccinated and is eligible to do so, to please get vaccinated. That is still the most effective approach to managing the pandemic. And for those who may be eligible for booster vaccines, to obtain those as soon as possible.
That's the voice of Dr. Howard Podolsky from Cambridge Medical and Rehab Centre, talking with our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, about the new coronavirus variant, which the WHO, the World Health Organization, is calling Omicron.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Thanks very much indeed for the Greek lessons coming through this morning as well. The pronunciation of Omicron, a lot of people getting in touch with us on that one. I will try and nail that one for you shortly. In the meantime, though, let's turn our attention from one booming industry, the gaming industry, to another, all things cryptos, where, of course, we get involved in what is going to be a very, very interesting conversation, not just today, but over the course of the next few weeks, next few months and years, with the growth, the unprecedented growth of all things crypto, NFTs and more. To walk us through these murky waters at the moment and to try and put things into perspective, we are lucky enough to be joined now by a special guest. He is the CEO and the co-founder of ArtsDAO, an NFT company, and he's also the co-founder and the co-host of the Crypto Shakes podcast. You can find out more online, cryptoshakes.com. It is a warm welcome to the show to Anas Burton. Anas, thank you very much indeed for joining us live on Microsoft Teams.
Thank you very much for having me.
First and foremost, cryptoshakes.com, loving the name, but explain to me what you and the rest of the team are trying to do there. Is it a demystification of the crypto world?
Very much so. I think we very much want to sort of simplify crypto for everyday people. There's a lot of complex jargon in this space. And if you look at sort of a lot of the kind of newsworthy sort of sources out there on YouTube, et cetera, I think there isn't a source in our view which very clearly broke down concepts in crypto, things like smart contracts, NFTs, all these sort of, you know, jargon terms. We sort of try to do this in a very, very simplified way. And we invite guests who we believe can help us sort of break down these complex terms.
So to that end, I mean, just the one thing that I've got a problem with here at the moment, Anas, is just how big the crypto market has become in recent times and how big it could become as well. I know that everyone's constantly talking about bubbles and when that bubble is going to burst, etc. But can you try and contextualize for us just the growth of the cryptocurrency markets?
Yeah, I think it's very important to think about where crypto fits within one's portfolio. So crypto has, in the beginning, sort of with Bitcoin, has conceptually sort of been, it's seen as sort of a hedge to inflation. So many people like to think about crypto in the context of its comparison to gold. So gold's market capitalization right now is close to 11 trillion. It's got 11 trillion market cap. And I think what's quite exciting is we've seen the crypto market cap generally jump from, you know, close to, I think it was close to 600 or billion in early 2020 to now close to $2.7 trillion. Bitcoin sort of being a big part of that, close to 1 trillion now. And I think many people think that what's happened here is we've seen people move their positions out of gold into this alternative hedge to inflation. And as a result, we've seen a huge sort of increase. I think the average growth of the market itself from sort of March 2020 is 1,300%, so 13x in the whole market cap. So it's a very, very exciting time to be in this space as we see a lot more growth in the next few years. I think there's many people thinking that that crypto will surpass the market cap for gold very soon.
I mean, the potential is there for everyone to see, and all those that are in the market at the moment are reaping the benefits of that potential. Another one that I sort of struggle with is the relationship between cryptocurrencies and NFTs. And I know that you obviously have co-founded and run an NFT company here, non-fungible tokens. Do the two go hand in hand? Are they bedfellows?
I think the two are. However, they are sort of addressing two different markets.
Yeah.
The crypto world is very much, think of crypto as just currencies, right? In our existing financial system, we have currencies that facilitate, you know, they're sort of the bedrock of financial systems generally. But on top of these cryptocurrencies, or on top of our currencies, we have banks, we have institutions, we have the legal system. And then on top of that, we also have culture, right? All of these are sort of fundamentally built on the bedrock of our currency, right? The fiat system, the GBP in England, the US dollar. And so what I'd like to say is we should view this crypto world as an alternative to this existing financial system, because that's how it sort of was formulated in the beginning back in 2010. So NFTs, some might say, I guess in this current, in its current simulation, it's sort of disrupting culture. Cryptocurrencies are sort of disrupting traditional finance through the introduction of decentralized finance. And I think what's exciting is we're seeing the replacement of traditional banking systems through crypto. So lending platforms, insurance. You'd be surprised at how much of traditional finance can be replaced by decentralized finance. And in the same vein, culture. So traditionally, you know, the way the music industry was run, or the film industry, you had all these significant middlemen. NFTs are enabling a lot of creators to go direct to consumer, and so I think that's what's most exciting about the space. There's a lot to sort of break down there.
No, yeah, I mean, but you make a sort of valid point there, and I wonder whether it's a fair point to make this. Because one way I look at it is sort of tradition versus untraditional. You could look at sort of cryptos and NFTs as non-traditional, the disruptors in the market. But the way that you've just put it there, that sort of idea of looking at centralized versus decentralized, is that sort of at the core as well?
It's very, very important to look at it that way, because that's sort of the core tenet or philosophy behind crypto. It is, it was formed after the 2008 financial crisis. You know, Satoshi Nakamoto, who nobody knows who really is, I mean, when he dropped the initial Bitcoin block, the Genesis block, it had that, you know, that initial sort of newspaper publication about the Chancellor in England, pumping, I don't know how much it was, but a significant sum of money into the economy. And so the whole idea of printing money, you know, which is part of this fiat system, is something quite antithetical to the crypto system, which seeks to counter this. I mean, the whole reason people buy gold, or they buy hedges to inflation, is because we live in a very, very inflationary world in this fiat system.
And as you have educated me this morning, and we're going to do this a lot more over the course of the next couple of weeks. Really appreciate your time this morning. Just very quickly, Anas, a lot of people are texting in and asking how they can get in touch with the ArtsDAO team and, of course, the Crypto Shakes. Can they find you online?
They can find me absolutely online, yes. This is cryptoshakes.com and artsdao.io. I also want to just say a couple of things. So in Abu Dhabi next month, from the 15th to the 17th, we're going to be at the DCS, which is Blockchain World.
Okay.
We'll be speaking there live. And so I think if you're interested, check it out. It's gdcss.ae to get tickets. We'll also be dropping and be part of this new NFT platform being launched called Helicon NFTs. It's a new sort of marketplace, play-to-earn sort of system. It's very exciting, and it'll be launching next month as well. We'll be talking a lot about that.
Indeed, we will.
In Abu Dhabi.
We will be catching up with you again in due course as well. Big thanks to you for joining us live on the line. We will, of course, be doing more of this in the weeks to come.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Time now for us to have a little look at the impact that the Omicron variant of the virus is going to, or is having, on the world of aviation. Vinamra Longani is the head of operations at Sarin and Co. And it's been very kind of Vinamra to join us live on the line, but also live on Microsoft Teams. Good morning to you, Vinamra.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show.
Concerning times for aviation at the moment. There we were, last week, Vinamra, talking about the sort of the warm glow around all things aviation. More and more people getting onto flights. The Dubai Air Show was a success, and yet the mere mention of a new variant out of the Southern African countries seemed to have got everyone in the industry spooked. What do we know so far? Are flights being cancelled as we speak?
Well, I mean, at the outset, you know, what one must state is we don't know a lot about this variant at this point in time. We know it exists. We know the World Health Organization has declared it a variant of concern, and rightfully so, I guess, because they know what they're doing. And they've given it a name, which is Omicron, which we'll be hearing over and over again, hopefully not for too long. But in my mind, even though scientists have said that it is apparently the most heavily mutated version yet of COVID and that vaccines may not work, it's too early to tell. We don't know enough to start panicking. But there again, to circle back to what you were saying, the world seems to be panicking, and the impact this has on the aviation industry is these travel bans are now starting to be imposed by countries across the world. And while I think this has a great detrimental impact on travel, I don't blame them. You know, we've lost 5 million people to COVID, and various countries have had various waves of this thing. So it's not good news. But I think, in my opinion, we're panicking a bit too much and a bit too early.
Will there be an economic cost attached to these concerns at the moment?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just looking at it from an aviation standpoint, you know, these travel bans are starting to have an impact already. You know, I mean, look at the UK, for example. They rolled out, all travelers entering the UK now have got to quarantine until they get their day two PCR test result back. Now, I mean, I was in the UK a couple of weeks ago, and that test costed about £70 per person. And, you know, and just getting the test, you know, if it comes to you by post, sending it back, the result can take days. If you go and get it done, well, you can't really now because you've got to quarantine. So yes, there's going to be a sizable impact on the aviation industry. And in my mind, it's threefold. You know, one, these restrictions will force people to reconsider travel because you never know what's coming next. And people don't like uncertainty. Mm. So that's one. The second one being, these measures, there's no consensus as to how one can control this because we don't know enough. So every country seems to be putting arbitrary bans. I mean, India, for example, I can tell you, we haven't placed any bans on anyone. I mean, all we've done really is people coming in from South Africa, Hong Kong and Botswana are going to have a test on arrival. So you see how vastly different these approaches are. And that impacts travel because, you know, people have got to all of a sudden, apart from having get their vaccine sort of certificates ready, they've got to now make sure that they comply with all these additional restrictions. And what happens in 2 weeks' time? Imagine if you travel and then something changes and then you can't get back home. So that has an impact. And lastly, and the one that really concerns me from an industry perspective is, you know, once these restrictions go in, it sometimes takes forever for these to be removed. I mean, the United States took forever to remove the vast majority of countries from this restricted list. So it's not good news for the industry. But like I said, I must emphasize that there is panic, and I guess rightfully so, but we really need to know more about this thing before we start, before we start taking greater steps to curtail it.
Morning, Vinamra. Richard here.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, two quick questions. So 30 seconds on each because we haven't got much time. The first one is I'm trying to book a flight from for my mother-in-law at the moment to come over from Mumbai. There's no seats available. Economy class is full. First class is full. There are some seats in business, but they cost a fortune. What's happening in terms of demand for flights between India and Dubai, whether it's Mumbai or Delhi, where you are, or Bangalore or other big centres? It just seems incredible at the moment.
Well, apart from the fact that there is demand for travel, India up till the 14th of December has these air bubbles in place, which greatly restrict capacity on routes. On the India-Dubai route, currently only about 30% of the capacity from pre-COVID levels is permitted. So airlines are having to operate. I mean, I can tell you for a fact, there are Emirates flights going out and coming back with only 180 passengers because the number of seats allocated to the UAE airlines have then sort of been filtered down and allocated to Emirates and other UAE carriers. So you're only permitted to sell so many seats in a week. So what are you supposed to do? There is this artificial sort of level that airlines have internally set. And what that does is seats aren't available to purchase. And that is why you see the astronomical fares that you do. But this should hopefully change starting the 15th of December, because between the UAE and India, scheduled flights and capacity as to what it was pre-COVID levels has been permitted. And this just happened yesterday.
Vinamra, I'll have to leave my second question to the next time. But hint, it revolves around the enormous photocopier you have in your living room at the moment. I've always wanted to know why you need the. Are you printing magazines in your house?
Well, we are a law firm, and we do print a lot of stuff. So I've named her. She's called Padmavati, and she came into my life last year because we just didn't feel it was right for one to step out of the house.
We've got to leave it there, Vinamra. Thanks for your time, Vinamra Longgani.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaii1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.